suffered blunt force injuries to her pelvic organs and rectum. Mr. Liggins asked Jennifer if she would go buy him some gum. And that is why, at the end of this case, we will ask that you return the only true, fair, and just verdict. And that is the verdict finding Stanley Liggins guilty of murder in the first degree.
The jurors sat transfixed, staring at the image of the 9-year-old girl projected on the courtroom wall. It was a picture of Jennifer Lewis. No, she wasn't sporting her purple dress. She wasn't talking nonstop about her Barbies, Bart Simpson, her new baby brother, or her birthday just 4 days away. This was the other Jennifer Lewis they were looking at. A charred corpse dumped on an Iowa school playground. I could feel tears running down my face as I looked at the image of the body. That night, 28 years ago, with a reporter's notebook in my hand, I stood a few feet from the body, and it all came rushing back to me. All of those memories from that night. Looking at the images of that poor child, I could almost smell the charred flesh and gasoline from that night so many years ago. That night, I wondered the same thing that the jurors must contemplate. Who would do such a thing? Prosecutor Mike Walton tried to answer that question during his opening statement.
On September 17th of 1990, Jennifer Lewis was a 9-year-old girl who was excitedly telling anybody who would listen about her upcoming birthday in 4 days. Jennifer Lewis never saw her 10th birthday because later that day, on September 17th of 1990, her burning body was discovered in the Jefferson School grounds in Davenport, Iowa. You're going to hear the testimony again from the transcript of the forensic pathologist, Dr. Peter Stevens, who again is deceased now. Dr. Stevens testifies that Jennifer's cause of death was manual strangulation. He also testifies that Jennifer suffered blunt force injuries to her pelvic organs and rectum. Injuries, he testifies, that can only be caused by the insertion of something into Jennifer. Mr. Liggins was an acquaintance of Jennifer's parents, Joe and Sherry Glenn. And their Jennifer and Stanley's paths cross. It begins at about 6 p.m. on September 17th. And that's when Mr. Liggins comes to the Glenn residence. And you're going to hear testimony of at least two women from the neighborhood. One was Mary Allen Watson. And she is going to testify that she knew Jennifer. In fact, Jennifer was, you know, one of those kids that hang out at her house or came over to play with her children. Mary Allen was one of those people that Jennifer was telling about her birthday coming up. And she knew Jennifer, and Jennifer had been at her house that day. And while Jennifer was out in the area, Mary Allen Watson will testify that a red car drove up, and Jennifer went to that car and was speaking to the driver of that vehicle. Mary Watson did not see who the driver was, she did identify the car. And the car was a little red four-door Peugeot. And that's an important piece of evidence in this case, because this Peugeot was a very distinct car. The little foreign car, it's kind of a maroon color, but it's got very distinctive taillights. And you're going to see that. That is going to be part of the evidence in this case. So she sees Jennifer. She later sees a picture of that car. And that car is, in fact, the car Mr. Liggins was driving that day. It's pretty much without dispute. So she sees her talking to that vehicle. The other witness, Diane Pemberton, also saw Jennifer Lewis, also knew Jennifer Lewis, and they're on the same, Marianne Watson and Diane Pemberton live on the same block in 6th Street in Rock Island, so it's about a block away from the Glens. She also, Diane Pemberton also sees Jennifer talking to this vehicle. She later identifies it as the same vehicle, the Peugeot that Mr. Liggins was driving. She also could identify the driver, and later identified that driver of that vehicle as Mr. Liggins. At some point then in that 6 o'clock range, 6 to 6:45, and Jennifer at the time she started that vehicle had her bicycle, and so we know she went back home to the Glens. Was there with her bicycle. And Mr. Liggins also came over to the Glen residence. And they were there. There were other individuals there at that time. And while they were there, Mr. Liggins asked Jennifer if she would go buy him some gum. And Jennifer asked her mother, Sherry, if she could take the money that Mr. Liggins gave her. It was a dollar. To go to the store to buy some gum. And she was given the permission to do that, and Jennifer left on foot to go buy gum at Max Liquor, a small store. Also sold liquor, but also sold other items. And so Jennifer went a couple blocks away on foot to Max Liquor. Sometime shortly thereafter, Mr. Liggins also leaves the Glen residence. You're going to hear the testimony of a man named Antonio Holmes. And Antonio Holmes is going to testify that he went to Max Liquor to buy some beer on that night. And as he was going into the store, into Max Liquor, he saw a male black standing outside the store. And he has identified that individual as Stanley Liggins. When he went into the store, he actually went to buy his beer. As he's standing at the cash register, he's standing behind a little girl buying gum. You're going to hear the testimony of the proprietor of that liquor store, Charlotte McCray. Charlotte McCray is going to testify that about 6:45 that day, Jennifer Lewis was there. She also knew Jennifer. Jennifer was there. She describes the dress that Jennifer was wearing, knew Jennifer, and that Jennifer did, in fact, buy some gum from her on that night. The path of Jennifer Lewis and Stanley Liggins, the evidence will show, crossed in a deadly manner for her on September 17th of 1990. And that is why, at the end of this case, we will ask that you return the only true, fair, and just verdict. And that is the verdict finding Stanley Liggins guilty of murder in the first degree.
During the first day of testimony, Stanley Liggins' demeanor appeared to be relaxed. His rapport with his lawyers, Aaron Haubacher and Nicole Watt, was good. By contrast, Jennifer Lewis's godmother Mary Rockwell sat in the audience weeping. Before the prosecutor's opening statement, a jury panel of 8 women and 7 men was selected. Issues involving race have long loomed over this case. Stanley Liggins is black. Jennifer Lewis was white. In 2 earlier trials, all white juries convicted Liggins. Appellate courts have tossed out both convictions. This sentiment was expressed by Kelvin Forder, a juror in Liggins' first trial.
I've grown up with black people all my life, you know, in Africa, and most of them, you know, they can be, I won't say threatening, but they do appear sometimes to be aggressive looking, or, you know, I don't want to sound like a racist or anything like that. You know, the black people, I think, have had a really bad deal in this, as a global population. I think, you know, they've been discriminated against greatly. And, you know, I have the philosophy that we were also in the same predicament as them thousands of years ago. You know, it's just civilization comes about by time and evolution and, you know, character building and stuff like that. We didn't jump out of the trees overnight and become civil like we are today, you know. So they're on that process of, I think, becoming like we are. I mean, I'm sure if you look back in time, I think we were all black originally. We all came from Africa by all appearances, you know, from anthropology. And I think the reason our skins changed color was because the white people moved north and they lived in a colder climate, and you never ever saw a black polar bear, did you? So I'm assuming that's why our skins end up white. We had to figure out a way to cook, had to figure out a way to stay warm, and our brains grew larger and we ended up with white skin. So having lots of sunlight and lots of food, and, you know, in a situation where they really didn't have to think much about food gathering and survival, they stayed pretty primitive. Not that that's a bad thing.
But the jury selected Thursday is more diverse. At least 3 of the jurors are African-American. A 4th, according to a lawyer involved in the case, identified himself as other. The remainder of the jury appears to be white. 3 of the jurors are alternates, but Mike Walton said court rules prohibit him from publicly identifying alternates during the trial. Folks, I want to talk to you about a terrific company. It's called Care Of. Care Of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. Care Of's fun online quiz asks you about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices, and takes only 5 minutes to find out what vitamins and supplements you specifically need. Now, let me tell you a story. I have a problem, or I should say I had a problem, with nodding off in the middle of the day. I have trouble sleeping at night. I'm not sure why that is, And I put that into the quiz, and it came back and said I needed to be taking more magnesium. Now, I'm a reporter, so I'm skeptical by nature, and I'm thinking maybe, but maybe not. I don't know. I just took an online quiz. So I called up my doctor's office and asked the nurse, hey, look at my last blood workup. Was I short of any particular vitamins or minerals? And she looks it up and says, yeah, you're a little bit low on magnesium. I'm thinking, maybe there is something to this quiz. So I started taking magnesium from Care Of. And you know what? I'm sleeping great at night. I haven't nodded off in the middle of the day since I started taking this magnesium and some other vitamins. And at church, where I was notorious for falling asleep in the pew, I'm wide awake and throughout the service. It's wonderful. And, you know, I'm not alone. 90% of people fall short of FDA recommended guidelines for at least one vitamin or nutrient. Take Care Of's quiz and get the vitamins you need and to get back on track and reach your health goals. Do it like I did. Your vitamins get delivered right to your door in personalized, easy-to-remember daily packs, perfect for a busy, on-the-go lifestyle like you and I have. Kara puts honesty first, providing all the research that supports each of their recommendations backed by a scientific advisory board. For 25% off your first month of personalized Kara vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter the promo code SUSPECT. Again, for 25% off of your first month of personalized Kara vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter the promo code SUSPECT. One more time, visit takecareof.com and enter the promo code SUSPECT and for 25% off your first month's subscription. I really recommend this company, folks. I love their product, and it's changed my life.
I'm Benjamin Payne with WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm speaking with reporter Scott Reeder. He's covering the criminal trial of Stanley Liggins in Waterloo, Iowa. On Thursday, jury selection entered its third day in the Black Hawk County Courthouse. As of Wednesday night, the jury pool had been reduced to 41 potential jurors. Scott joins me now over Skype for updates. Scott, thank you for joining me.
It's great to be here.
So heading into court proceedings Thursday morning, the jury pool stood at 41 people. That's down from the more than 100 potential jurors who showed up to the county courthouse earlier this week. Now that the proceedings are over for Thursday, have prosecutors and defense attorneys agreed on a jury?
Yes, they have. They've selected 12 jurors and three alternates, and they began hearing testimony today.
And could you tell us more about the demographics of the jury? What do we know about them so far?
Well, of the 15 people that are sitting on that panel, three are African-American, and one person who looks to be of multiple racial groups is also on the jury. When he filled out the questionnaire about himself, he listed himself as other under race. So I don't know what that means, but it is a racially diverse jury, particularly when you consider this is in the state of Iowa, which is a pretty racially homogenous state.
Sure. And so there, you said there's 15 on the panel, but a few of them are alternates. Is that correct? And they don't know who is an alternate at this point?
That's correct. That's they know who the alternates are, but that's not public information. So we don't know who the alternates are on the jury.
Right. And so once the jury was established, opening statements were made. Could you tell us about that, what you heard?
Yes. Well, the prosecution got up and they made a detailed opening statement talking about the history of the case. And this is where the jurors learned that this was a burned child, that it was somebody who had been killed 4 days before their 10th birthday. We learned about the kind of the strategy they're going at. They made a point of saying, you know, circumstantial evidence is evidence. And they were trying very hard to bring that home. I thought that Mike Walton, the Scott County attorney, did a very masterful job in his opening statements. I thought that the jurors were very much engaged with him, and I thought he did a good job.
And what circumstantial evidence was presented so far? Were they just kind of making preliminary remarks?
Well, I don't know if we have circumstantial evidence really going into the mix yet. I mean, at this point, the people that testified today were the dispatcher who sent emergency personnel out to the fire. We have the firefighters who got there and put the flames out that were on Jennifer's body. We had the posthumous testimony of arson investigator for the city of Davenport at the time. They read his transcript of his testimony from earlier trials, and they talked about, you know, kind of the gore of the scene. I mean, and they had autopsy photos they projected on the wall of a very, very badly burned child. And you could see kind of a visceral reaction from the jurors and everyone else in the room. This was pretty horrible stuff to be having to look at.
And what about the opening statements from the defense?
They opted to not give opening statements. That means they can give their statements later in the trial. So I've covered a number of trials over the years, and, well, usually defense and prosecution open at the beginning of the trial. The defense doesn't always have to. They can choose to delay their statements.
And what's the rationale behind that?
No idea, but just the way they can opt to do that. So okay. I don't know. And to be honest with you, I've covered a lot of trials in Illinois and Texas. I don't know all the rules of Iowa jurisprudence, so I'm not going to speculate on it.
Sure. And do you know roughly how long testimony ran today?
Oh, I think they had the jury selected, and they started hearing testimony around 1:30 and were done about 4 o'clock.
Okay. So what's next for tomorrow?
We have more prosecution witnesses that will be testifying. We'll have, I guess, a very full day of listening to some very unpleasant topics. I mean, about a child being killed, but they're building the case. They haven't really brought Stanley Liggins into the mix yet in the evidence, but that's probably what I'm expecting tomorrow, is how they came to start focusing on Stanley Liggins.
And speaking of Stanley Liggins, the defendant, what was his body language like today?
He seemed very happy. That was my impression. He seemed relaxed, happy, and very engaged with his lawyers. His body language was very good. He was wearing a suit coat, a dress shirt, and no tie.
Okay. And what about the jury? What was their body language like when they were presented with some of these graphic images and descriptions?
I think the jury was pretty horror-stricken when they saw the images of a horribly burned corpse projected onto the wall. That was hard for everybody. I didn't see anybody visibly crying. I've certainly seen jurors cry over the years, but they seem very somber.
I'm Jason Horton.
And I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
What is Ghost Town? On Ghost Town, we talk about the haunted, the abandoned, the unexplored, the mysterious.
We love this subject, and we think you will too. So subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts to get new episodes every single week. And follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Ghost Town Pod. And you can email us if you have a suggestion or a story or something you might want us to include in a future episode at ghosttownpod@gmail.com.
Boo! Did I scare you?
Huh.